Hello and welcome to The Wound Doctors, a podcast series dedicated to the study and improved treatment of wounds. These episodes are brought to you by ConvaTec, pioneering trusted medical solutions to improve the lives they touch. My name's Rod Morrie, and as a layperson, I have to say, perhaps even to my surprise, that being part of this podcast has been an extraordinary and fascinating learning experience. I also must admit, however, that I have wondered more than once, what might the future hold for wound care and dressing? Surely everything we're going to discover has been discovered by now. Well, as is so often the case on this show, apparently not. My co-host is Dr. Frances Henshaw. And Dr. Fran, wound care and wound dressings all feels like a riddle that was solved long ago. But if I'm reading that look that you're giving me correctly, the reality is that in many ways, and you must pardon the pun, but I've been waiting to use this for several episodes, we're only just scratching the surface. Who are we speaking to?
Oh, Rod. And what that was a terrible joke. I thought I did the terrible jokes around here.
You do.
So, Rod, today I've got help from a colleague in the UK. So I read a press release recently that said ConvaTec, who we both work for, well, not you, I do, have acquired Triad Life Sciences. And Triad Life Sciences have an InnovaMatrix technology platform.
Of course they do.
Well, I was like, oh, what on earth is that? And I'm like, you know what's going to happen? I'll go out and about and people will start asking me about this and I haven't got a clue. So I had to phone a friend. I didn't phone a friend. I've got a friend on a podcast. So Dr. Holly Hathaway, it's lovely to have you here. And thanks for coming along to explain about this new acquisition of ConvaTec.
Thanks, Fran. It's great to be here. And I'm really excited to talk about this because it's an area of science and wound healing that I'm really interested in. So InnovaMatrix is a biologically derived wound care offering that ConvaTec are going to be launching. And it consists of porcine placenta. Oh. So this is pig placenta, would you believe it, that is decellularized. So it's a xenograft. It is a wound graft that is derived from non-human species. So it's pig. And it is processed to remove all of the cellular and genetic information that's contained within it so that we don't elicit an immune response. So it is a decellularized porcine placental tissue, and it can be used to guide wound healing. So while we remove all the cells and the nucleic acid and the genetic information, we retain some of the important bioactive components. And this is alongside the sort of protein structure of this product. This is what can guide wound repair.
Oh, I must admit, Holly, I get a bit nervous when the word biology gets introduced because the last time we heard the word biological on this show, it was in relation to debridement. And I let that go for a moment before I found out what biological debridement means. And I'm not sure I've fully recovered from that. Is it somewhat similar to what you're describing? Two things about it. The first thing I think is there must be a core of people out there in the world who find this a sci-fi type crazy area for humans to be delving into. Why is that not the case, assuming it's not the case? And why are we going down this path?
It does sound slightly sci-fi, but actually the use of skin grafts has been around for a long, long time. And the use of skin grafts from other species has also been around for a very long time. And the aim of these kind of skin substitute materials is to replace the tissue that was lost. And that may be in the case of the protein, so the collagen, the elastin, or the hyaluronic acid content that's been lost. And porcine placenta retains these proteins. And in doing so, it can mimic the ECM of human skin. So we can start to provide a structure from which cells can ingress, and we can start to reform the tissue that's been lost. And that's the overall aim here. And not only does the sort of the graft here, the ANOVA matrix material, not only does it provide that sort of scaffold, but it also retains some of the key bioactives that can drive wound repair. So things like growth factors and cytokines are retained within this tissue, and they can start to stimulate the immune system, and they can cause things like cell proliferation and cell migration. So this is a really great material to look to when we are talking about guided wound repair.
Broadly speaking, this sort of biological wound treatment idea, where are we on that curve, broadly speaking? One can't help but imagine that there's all sorts of incredible advancements that might be possible. For example, this might be a question for you, Fran. I don't know, what happens to a wound that's healed? What's gone on there, and what's left behind that's different to what was there before the wound? And is there potential for some changes in those outcomes of what gets left behind?
Well, yeah, absolutely. We know that wounds, when they've healed, don't go back exactly to how the tissue was before. And most of the time it's weaker. It doesn't have things like sweat glands and hair follicles. And we know that this kind of tissue is probably more prone to breaking down. Sometimes it doesn't have as much collagen as our normal uninjured skin. So there's lots of things that we can improve in wound healing. And possibly what we see is that the longer a wound hangs around before it heals, the worse the outcome is at the end. So you end up with a less strong wound. So I think that, you know, if we can get these things into the wound, like this new graft, we might be able to expedite the healing and come out with something that's a little bit better at the other end. Would you agree, Holly?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's about that kind of, not only are we looking for sort of wound closure, but we are looking for improved outcomes as well. It's where we're moving towards, that kind of regeneration of tissue, so that we can more readily replicate the uninjured state so that outcomes are improved.
Holly, I feel like we're wandering into the Rumsfeld idea of we don't know what we don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Particular area, the unknown unknowns.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so much to learn in this field, and it's very multidisciplinary. And something that kind of I'm pretty interested in is this tissue engineering approach. So we can look towards our models in the lab. So the idea is that for us to improve our models in the lab to test and to understand wound healing, we have to effectively build the skin. And we can actually take a lot from the cosmetic industry, in the sense that when they banned animal testing for cosmetics, the cosmetic industry had to come up with new ways to test their formulations. So they had to build skin in the lab. And so the more we learn about this kind of synthetic skin in the lab, if we can do it in the lab, can we not take that forward then, use all of that learning to build bioengineered skin to implant? So in terms of where we are on that curve, we are taking tissue from humans, so, or, you know, autografts with skin grafts from the patient's own skin, or allografts, so, you know, human skin from other sources, so cadaver skin, or xenografts from other species. And in this case, we're talking about the pig, talking about pig placental tissue. But there is scope to go further than that and to move on that curve towards, you know, taking what we already know, taking tissues that exist and bioengineering them into, you know, an even more advanced product that can replicate, you know, all the layers of the skin, or can contain more cellular components to drive wound healing. And in this case, the ANOVA matrix is decellularized because we have to prevent any immune system response. But perhaps there is scope for engineering to include cellular products.
What's the wound care nirvana, Fran? Something that we just spray on and does an amazing job, and it's like the wound never happened? Is that where we're trying to get to with wounds, or is that unfeasible?
Oh, absolutely. We want people to have a normal wound healing trajectory. And I think that's really important, because we actually just want people to be able to do what the body does normally. We don't want people to be like aberrations where, you know, the skin zips itself shut straight away. We just want people who are disadvantaged to be playing on an even field. And I think that's, to me, that's what Nirvana looks like. It doesn't look like something out of, you know, Frankenstein's lab. But yeah, I just find this whole thing absolutely fascinating. And Holly, you're probably not allowed to answer this question, but
best ones, Fran.
Yeah, they're the best ones, aren't they? Firstly, I would imagine due diligence for acquiring a life science company is quite tricky. It's probably a little bit harder than like buying a coffee shop or something. How long does the process take, and what does it involve?
So the process can take, it pretty much takes as long as it takes. And that's to make sure that all of the due diligence is done correctly and it's thorough. And the due diligence itself involves lots of different functions. So you're talking, you know, commercial, regulatory, which is a big one as well, and R&D. From my point of view, from an R&D point of view, it's to make sure that the product is scientifically sound, is to check over the data. So this is the first placental-derived tissue that's been approved as a medical device. So it doesn't have to go through certain regulatory pathways that human cells and tissues and cell and tissue products have to go through. It can go down as a device with 510K approval. So the due diligence was looking at everything that was submitted for the 510K approval to check that, you know, obviously it's been approved by the regulatory body, but scientifically as well, we want to make sure that we're happy with it, that it aligns with our strategy, all of those things. So yes, it's a very lengthy process. There's a huge amount of data to go through.
And did you have to do that?
With a huge team of people, yes. From R&D, so you're like, I only obviously looked at it from the R&D.
Yeah. So you're like reviewer two, looking at all of their evidence, scrutinizing
it all.
I hope to never
be reviewer two. There weren't issues. It was a great, hence the acquisition, because it's a great product with great evidence to support it. So, it was relatively straightforward.
Wow. And I have to ask, you know, obviously wildly excited when I saw the press release. I didn't bother reading all of it because I just thought I just need to get on to Holly and ask her about it. When are we going to have that? When are we going to have our hands on this stuff? And when are we putting it into patients in our clinics?
Well, I think that's going to depend on different markets as well. I actually don't have a definitive answer for that. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to answer that, Fran, because of...
I love it when people say things like that.
Sorry.
No, that's perfectly reasonable. So hopefully, you know, now we've made friends, you'll consider Australia as the first market where you need to try everything out, because we get very upset sometimes in Australia when we get stuff later than everybody else. And people in Australia like tech, you know, we have more mobile phones than anyone else, so I think we should have more graphs than everyone else as well.
Holly, is this somewhat controversial, this sort of research and these kinds of products? I imagine there are people who unreasonably find it somewhat confronting, but is it a controversial area, and is that something that you consider at ConvaTec before going down a road like this?
I'm not sure whether it's controversial, but there are additional aspects to consider for these kind of things. So if we are using, you know, this is an animal product, so animal welfare is at the forefront. And during the due diligence, you know, of this product, it was really encouraging to see that every function, so we had people from clinical, regulatory, marketing, R&D, at the forefront of everybody's mind was, you know, is this ethical? Can we justify this? You know, how are the pigs being cared for? What controls, what safeguards are in place? So there are definitely additional considerations, but I think as long as they're taken into account, then this is an ethical product. And, you know, there are, if we go down the sort of biologic avenue for wound healing, there are, with certain technologies, there is controversy. So embryonic stem cells, for example, there's controversy surrounding their use, and, you know, rightly so. There's controversy around gene editing as well. If we are actually editing the genetic material of cells, at what point, how far do we go along that line? So, you know, with the biological aspect stuff, there are considerations, and there is some controversy. Some of it's controversial, but not all of it.
People have legitimate concerns, I guess, and some people probably have not so legitimate concerns.
Yeah, but I think the other thing that you know is that in something like medical devices and pharma, you're in a highly regulated environment. So, you know, you can't just go off-piste and start doing things that, you know, are unethical or are detrimental to animal health or patient health or something like that. So I think, you know, when you're working in big markets like Europe and the US, I mean, everywhere in the world now has its checks and balances. But, you know, in particular, these countries that Convatec and Triad are derived from, you're not going to be able to pull a fast one and do anything that's unethical. So I think, you know, Convatec has its internal checks and balances. And I think the regulatory environment that they work in will also make sure that things are done in the way that they should be.
Are we going to see more of that, Fran and Holly, that bumping up of the technology and what we're capable of doing with the questions about what we should be doing and when has it gone too far, those kinds of things? Are we going to see more of that as time and research goes on? It feels like it's almost inevitable.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I think what happens is things that are considered controversial sometimes then just be considered normal, don't they? You know, it was like when they started genetically modifying tomatoes or something, everybody was absolutely up in arms about it. We don't really hear much about that anymore, do you? And I presume that it went ahead. So I think that, you know, people just get used to things, and there is this kind of selection process that the regulatory framework means that you will end up with things that are perhaps looking a little bit left field, but are acceptable, and they become increasingly acceptable.
As a researcher, Holly, it must be sometimes personal questions you ask yourself too about these things, don't you? You must bump up against things from time to time and particularly in this field when you start to talk about biological stuff. I'm not trying to put anybody on the spot or be difficult, but these are real questions that are going to need to be confronted as we go on, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there are aspects of research that, you know, don't align with, you know, people's personal values as well. And you think, no, I'm not comfortable with it. You know, and we see this a lot with our test models as well. What we aim to do is to generate enough in vitro data in the lab that will mean we can reduce and replace animal studies. And if I personally feel that there isn't enough data to warrant an animal study, or the outcome of that study isn't going to be valuable, it's just not something that I would even consider doing. And it's not actually down to me. It would go to a board and they would say, no, you're not doing it. So yes, it's constant. We have to constantly check ourselves, because, you know, as scientists, we want to develop technology and we want to see this come to fruition, but there's a way in which to do that, isn't there? So we have to be accountable for that.
You're always on the frontier, aren't you? In research and development, by definition, that's where you are, isn't it? It's on the frontier where these questions are real.
Yeah, and there's so much unknown as well. So it's when you're working at that sort of front end stuff, is that actually we don't know what could happen. We don't know where this is going. We've just got an idea and we're trying to take it forward. And you know, that's why having a good team is so important. So that we can control for things that are unexpected.
Dr. Fran, oh, to be a fly on the wall at some of the Monday meetings in the research and development department.
I know. I do. When I see all this like new bright and shiny stuff, there is a very small part of me that thinks being in the lab on a Monday morning might be quite exciting. But Holly, look, I have to say thank you for letting us have a little peek behind the curtain of Triad Life Sciences, which is this recent acquisition. It really is a whole new chapter, I think, for Convatec. So it's been great that you've been able to share with us a few bits and pieces, and we will be definitely getting you back when there's more evidence that can be shared with our listeners.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for having me. It's very exciting.
It certainly is.
You've got nobody to blame but yourself for the fact that you're going to be coming back, Holly, because you're too too intelligent and too easy to listen to. So that's all.
Oh, I wouldn't go that far.
Not our fault. Thanks for taking the time today, Andrew. Thank you, Dr. Fran. Always fabulous to have you along as well.
Thanks very much, Rod.
That's it for The Wound Doctors. We will, of course, be back to do it all again next time here on The Wound Doctors.